I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. So, in recent weeks, we have covered here, I thought, in depth, we talked about treason and treachery and the definitions of that, and we compared that to the actions of General Milley. We have looked at corruption repeatedly and what it means in our world and how everything just seems to be totally, completely corrupt. And how do we get around that? How do we fix that? That's the big concern. So a couple of things I want to look at. Do we always get the truth from our government? Now, I thought the Joe Biden administration was going to be the most transparent, the most active, the most wonderful thing on the planet. He doesn't take press conference calls. He doesn't answer at the helicopter. He doesn't answer direct questions. His press spokesperson is a girl who goes round and round in circles with her answers. They never answer things directly. Let's look at the drone strike. Let's look at the drone strike that took place recently. Now, a drone strike is an over-the-horizon kind of an attack. You hear that term, over-the-horizon. What that means is basically we can attack someone without running right up to them. We can send the drone, which is an unbelievable piece of equipment. The drone can be flown remotely by a pilot who has cameras, can see the terrain, flies right to the target, and can release missiles, can do all kinds of things. And this way, if the drone gets shot down, we don't lose a pilot. Now, of course, when President Biden and his administration ran the hell out of Afghanistan inappropriately, leaving, $80 billion worth of military equipment, some of the things they left behind were drones, which are very powerful pieces of equipment. As a terrorist, I would imagine it would be a really good piece of equipment that you could use. But let's talk about the drone strike right after the suicide bomber that killed 13 of our wonderful American military personnel at the Kandahar airport. Remember the conversation that came after that? Joe Biden came out, "We will not let this stand. We will take action. We will do whatever somebody told him to say. And then they drone striked with a Hellfire missile, a car that we were told was being loaded with explosives to go to the airport and kill more Americans and people. And that's why this car had to be drone striked. Now, to be clear, I am perfectly okay with drone strikes striking terrorists. I have no problem with that at all. And had this been a great strike on a terrorist, I would certainly applaud the Biden administration for doing the right thing. We were told it was the right thing, weren't we? Weren't we told this was a righteous strike? I think that's the word they use, righteous strike. That this terrorist was seen loading explosives into his vehicle, and then he was going to come and get us. And the Hellfire missile did its business. It blew up the car, killed the terrorist or the purported terrorist, and then we heard that there may be some civilian casualties also associated with that explosion, because that's what happens in a war zone. As horrifying as that is, as terrible as that is, it's a reality. You're fighting a war, especially a war where the coward terrorists hide amongst civilians, where they hide in hospitals, they hide in schools, they attack, and then they kind of relish the fact that you attack back and maybe you get some civilians in the time, because then they can make a big deal out of it. It's a horrifying business, the business of war and fighting terrorism. But in this particular drone strike, we were told this was a terrorist. Then we were told slowly it started to leak out that maybe 7 or 8 children nearby were also killed when the missile exploded into the car. Because the car, and I remember listening to this on the news, that the observation of the car, this was by the military, the Biden administration's military analysts, that the explosion of the car when the Hellfire missile hit it was pretty clear that it was loaded with explosives, and this would have been really bad, and that's probably why the civilians were killed, because the explosion, the initial explosion from the Hellfire missile was one thing, but then the secondary explosion of the bombs that this terrorist had in his car he was going to use against us, when they detonated, it made an even bigger explosion, and that is probably what killed the civilians. Now, if that had been the case, if that had really been what happened, the Hellfire missile struck the car, and then the car's secondary explosion were the bombs inside that car, and we lost civilians, even children. As horrifying as that is what happens in war, and that's one of the problems with supporting terrorism. If your community supports terrorism and attacks on people, well, when there's retaliation, you might get caught up in it. And the fact that it's children is the saddest thing of all, that points out, you know, this business of war and how devastating it can be. So we heard 7 children got killed in the detonation of this car. The problem was they couldn't tell us who the terrorist was. They had enough information to know, enough intelligence to know, that this man was loading bombs into his car, but we couldn't get a name out of him. Right? The Biden people would not tell us the name of this terrorist. But they sure were running around with their feathers out, right? That they will not let this kind of thing stand. They struck a blow against these terrorists. Well, for many of us, it seemed strange that they couldn't tell us who these terrorists were, that there was something up with this that didn't sound right. Then you started hearing the stories coming out of Afghanistan that people were saying the guy that they blew up was not a terrorist. He was not a terrorist at all, and it was mostly children that were killed in this thing. There was a man and his car were blown up, and there was a bunch of children killed. And then we started hearing the story, again from within Afghanistan, was that this man was an aid worker, and he was loading water into his car to take to some area where they needed water. He was as innocent as he could be. And you say, well, you know, there's no way that can be. I mean, there's no way our intel would not be that bad. They would not strike a guy like that. Well, this is where corruption comes in, my friends. We had to strike fast because Biden administration wanted to look like they were doing the right thing. They were not going to let this stand, as they should not. If we found out who it was that was part of that planning of that bomb, that suicide bombing that killed 13 of our military personnel, we should strike them. We should strike them hard. We should strike them so hard that they don't just think twice, that they think to never again do it, because that's how painful the return strike was. And that's what their mission was. That's what they wanted to show. Look at the world. See, we're not incompetent, even though our exit is incompetent, though we're leaving people behind, we're incompetent, though our planning of this was incompetent, our leadership here was incompetent. This drone strike was not. This was the real deal. This was using American power. And I'll do it again, Mr. Biden says, right? Well, what do we find out now? Was it a righteous drone strike? Was it a terrorist loading bombs in his car? No, it was not. It was an aid worker, a man loading water in his car, and his children and his nieces and nephews were in the car. And altogether, I believe they said 10 people, 9 of them children, were killed in that drone strike. Another complete incompetence. And the lie to all of us, until they had to reveal the truth, was another corruption. And the Biden administration is just as corrupt as anything I have ever seen. They can't seem to do anything right. The tide, we're hearing, oh, he's down in the 30s in his approval rate. Well, the hell with the approval rating. Look what he's doing to the country. Look what he's doing to us around the world. You know, I have a lot of friends of mine who, they're more on the progressive side of life. You know, and we try and have conversations. And actually, I got to say, a couple of them, very, very intelligent people. And we do manage to have a conversation about things. We disagree, really, on many things. They're much more socialist than they really want to admit. But we do manage to have actual conversation about things. And they can't seem to come up with an answer for all of this. You know, the inflation that's out of control. We've said this before. You don't think the world leaders around the world sit there and are laughing hysterical at Joe Biden? that this is who's running America, him and Schumer and Pelosi. These people are running America, and they are. There's no doubt about it. They're running America. But that drone strike was a terrible, terrible thing, and it was completely inappropriate, and I feel terrible for that man and those children, and I pray for them. I pray for their souls, and I pray for our country, because can you imagine how that's going to fire up people to believe now when the Taliban and the ISIS-K and all these other people start telling them how America doesn't care about you or your children, they'll just kill you? They can point right to that drone strike. And I saw a video of a man who lost some of his children in that car. And he says, no American has come to me to say they were sorry. Now, one of the American military people did say, we apologize terribly for this horrible mistake, which is nice, but you know, I guess nobody can really go to that man because we're not there anymore. We pulled out and we left. We have no military presence, so I don't know what we can do. It's a terrible, terrible tragedy. But this points out the need for really good intelligence, really doing the right thing. I am not one who opposes use of force where it's necessary. But in this case, this seems to me like this was really just a window dressing so that President Biden or whoever's running him could look like, look how tough we are. We're not afraid to use force. We're going to get a terrorist. Meantime, if you're saying it was ISIS-K that detonated the suicide bombing that killed our 13 military personnel, and you know where ISIS-K is holed up, why haven't we not decimated that entire area? Now that we know this drone strike was bogus, and we didn't strike the people who killed us, where is the massive retaliatory strike on ISIS-K? Where is that? Are we ever going to see that? Or are we just going to kind of forget that one? Those 13, you know, just chalk them up to, let's not get ourselves in any deeper and make another mistake. I don't know. It seems like the wrong thing. So I wanted to cover that for a little bit because that's just another corruption, another horrifying thing that took place with this Biden administration. Gabby Petito, a young lady, 22 years old, originally from Long Island, New York, and currently, previous to her death, was from Florida, it looks like. She was living with her boyfriend, this guy, Laundry, or I think that's his last name, Laundry, or something like that, Laundry. It doesn't spell like laundry, like put your clothes in the laundry, but I think that's how it's pronounced. Well, when we look at this, there's a lot of talking heads on the news that have been talking about this for days. I watched the video of the car stop when Gabby and her boyfriend got stopped by the police. And they had had a domestic disturbance. No, the two of them had had an argument or a fight, and he was driving the car a little slowly or a little fast, and then he hit a curb, and the cop pulled him over, and she's crying in the car, and they get everybody out. And she was just you could see she was an upset young lady. The poor thing was upset. And he came out. He seemed pretty reasonable, trying to calm her down. You know, that's why they were, you know, couples have fights. Couples have arguments. It happens. But to see her there in the flesh out there, I can only imagine as her parents seeing those videos of her on this trip, she's on this road trip with this boyfriend. And then for him to just come home in her van without her in it and not say a word, refuse to cooperate. Well, you'd have to think right off the bat that there was something wrong, that there was something seriously wrong with the situation. Now, the fact that he wouldn't talk, he has a constitutional right not to talk. People are wondering, you know, why didn't the cops grab him and drag him into the station and you know, make him talk? Because you can't. First of all, at the time, they had no idea any crime was committed. Now, most of us, with common sense, know the van comes home, the boyfriend comes home, and the girlfriend don't come home. Something happened, right? The evidences of the domestic incidents they had on the roadway, sure, that can point to a pattern. But you know what? Lots of couples have problems, and somebody doesn't end up dead. They just have arguments, and police end up involved. I went to hundreds and hundreds of domestic violence calls where it was just people arguing real loud and somebody decided to call the police because it was so loud. Well, in this case, this guy doesn't want to talk and people are upset that they can't make him talk. His family won't make him talk. His lawyer won't let him talk. And my heart went out to Gabby's family who were just begging this guy, please just tell us where to go look for her. Well, here's the bottom line there. If you did something to her, if you were the guy that did something to her, you killed her, you dumped her, you did whatever, any help you give them is going to lead to you being in handcuffs and going to prison, or in, you know, depends on what state you're in, you could be going to the death chamber. So the reality is, to get this guy to say something didn't surprise me at all. What surprised me is that he had the forethought to get home, get to a lawyer, and then shut up immediately and just say nothing, absolutely nothing. You know, can you look at that and say, gee, that's is that an what do they call it? A preponderance of the guilt, that you're guilty, so therefore you don't say anything? Of course it is. Even if they had a fight, say she wanted to leave him and take off and go with some other guy she met on the road because she's sick of him. She met this other guy and she's going to go with him. Well, it might be embarrassing for the boyfriend to say that, but he would say, listen, I don't know what to tell you. We were at this hotel. She met this guy. We had a fight and she wanted to leave with him, got in a car and drove away. Last time I saw her was in Happytown, New Mexico. You could go back and look at the videos and you'd see her leave and get in a car with some other guy and drive away. At least you'd know where to start. The fact that this guy didn't say anything, refused to say anything, was a clear indicator to me that he knew if he said anything, if he submitted to any kind of an interview, he would be found culpable in whatever happened to her. And then we know very recently human remains were found in Teton Park, where apparently they were. And by all indications, the human remains they found are going to be this poor young lady, Gabby Petito. Beautiful young girl, world in front of her, her whole life, and taken away for whatever reason, apparently by this boyfriend, Laundrie. Who knows? Maybe it wasn't. Maybe she fell off a cliff when they were hiking, and he didn't want to tell anybody what happened. I don't know. We're going to find out, but it certainly doesn't look good. It looks like he did something to her, and the forensics examination will tell us now. It's been a little bit of time that she's probably been deceased, so there's probably, you know, as disgusting as it is, there's some decomposition, but a good medical examiner will be able to determine the cause of death as best as possible. I wonder if that's them calling in right now to tell me something. I don't know. I should check it and find out if it is. I don't think it is, but you never know why these people would call in to me and say, hey, Lieutenant Joe, what do you think? It does happen here in the studio. We do get calls here once in a while when there's breaking news. People will call me. Sometimes some of you listeners will call me. You'll call in and ask questions and stuff. Usually I get it in the form of faxes and emails, but sometimes it's a call. So we have my producer, Miss Kathy, she's checking on that call, and she's shaking her head no, that it's not something in reference to our stories we're covering today. So it looks like they found Gabby, and she is deceased, and her family is decimated and destroyed because of the act of this young man. And I guess in time we will find out what happened here. But, you know, it started to become another one of those stories that we see, like Lacey Peterson, where she was missing, and, you know, Scott Peterson was found guilty of her murder and murder of the baby that she was carrying. These things do happen. It's very sad. I heard Rudy Giuliani talking about it the other day. And Rudy's a longtime prosecutor. He's investigated many, many homicides and serious crimes. And basically what he was saying is that, as unfortunate as it is, the reality is homicide is with us as a part of human condition. People kill other people. It's just, you know, I don't know if there was indicators that this guy could be a killer. Who is? Look around the room. Look at the people you're with. Is there anybody there who could be a killer? I don't know. It's important to talk about it and think about it and keep Gabby in our thoughts. Hopefully she's in a better place, in the arms of a loving God who will bring her home, and someday she'll be with her family again. So I wanted to make sure we wanted to talk about Gabby. Another thing that's in the news, you know, as some of you know, I teach and train schools, businesses, religious facilities on active shooter response and survival, keeping everyone safe. That's what I do. That's what my company does, True Security Design. And we see, a while ago, I wrote an article going back a while ago, we're talking May of 2020, you know, when we were going to do 15 days of shutdown and lockdown because of the COVID virus. We were 15 days, and then we're gonna break out of that and move on with our lives again. You know, flatten the curve, I think that was it. Flatten the curve, and then we can get out of there, protect the hospitals. Okay, it seemed like a thing to do at the time. But it seemed to me that watching my own son, who was in high school at the time, and his friends, they were very connected. All these kids were very connected. They were part of the marching band. They were part of the Boy Scouts. They were hiking and doing all kinds of physical activities. They were in sports. Jack is a double letterman. His friends were all lettermen. They were good, decent kids, and they had a good group of friends. But I noticed that the separation that they had to endure as friends, you know, nice group of guys and girls. They all got together all the time. They would come to our house all the time and do a fire pit in the backyard, you know, and all hang around and have a good time. And then they were shut out from each other from, you know, March until the end of May when I wrote the article. And what I wrote the article was about is that while there is no profile of an active shooter, there's no profile you can point to, there are traits of an active shooter. And one of the one things we can look at is isolation from other people. So if you have someone in your school or your business, this works for adults too, people that don't feel connected to your location, whether it's your business or your school, or your church or whatever, they don't feel connected, they feel apart from instead of a part of. And then they have maybe some mental issues, diagnosed or undiagnosed mental issues, and they can certainly find themselves in a position to commit violence. And we see this in school shooters, religious facility shooters, business shooters. We see these things happen all the time. So my article at the time was for Campus Safety Magazine. And what I tried to cover was that thinking we were coming back. Remember a year ago in May, we were coming back from all this after the 15 days, and that turned into 30 and 45. But we were going to go back to school in June of 2020. Everyone's going to go back to school. The kids were going to get together, people, businesses, everything. Well, that didn't happen, did it? No, it's well over a year now, and we're still not all completely together. Most schools are opening. You see schools closing when 20 kids end up with COVID, and they all got to wear masks in the school, and it's a nightmare for everybody. So we're not over this yet. My point being, back in May of 2020, when I started to see this disassociation of these kids from each other, knowing that that's a trait of someone who commits violence, I started to think, you know, there's a lot of kids we all know, people who are in safety and security in our schools and businesses, and we know who the people are that we should be concerned about for the most part. You know, they've identified themselves. They say threatening things. They do threatening things. They make comments, things that can be really uncomfortable for people to hear, that kind of sound like a threat. Sometimes they're veiled threats. You know, but they make people uncomfortable. So those people we know about, and we're trying to pay attention to those people. My concern was that with this unprecedented shutdown and lockdown of our world and this isolation of everyone from each other, that you would have people and kids that were not on the radar, who probably would have went their whole life without being involved in any kind of a violent incident, all of a sudden, now, because of this unprecedented situation, this isolation, you may see some kids fall into that trap, and we're not prepared for them. So that was the basis of my article. It's a long way of getting around to it. Campus Safety Magazine, May of 2020, and it got a lot of play. I mean, I got a lot of conversations from people in schools that saying, you know, we didn't consider that, we should consider that, what could we do? And you have to pay closer attention to your people. Who's coming in your buildings? What are you doing? Well, when we look just recently in Russia, there was a school shooting. Now, the whole world was locked down, but apparently they're getting back together in Russia just like they are here. And this kid killed 8 kids in his class. And the video, you talk about a disturbing video. It's not of the shooter, but you see literally dozens of these young kids climbing out and jumping from the second story window of the school, trying to get away from the shooter. It is, it's frightening, it's uncomfortable to see, but it's a reality. So I want to refresh that call here for everybody out there, for my teacher friends that are out there, law enforcement friends that are out there, military people that are all, everybody out there. If you have a business, a religious facility, you have kids in school, you are in school, we have to pay close attention to everything that people say and do as we get back together, because I think there is this PTSD that has affected all of us to different degrees. Some of us much more than others. But the reality is we've all been affected by this shutdown, this lockdown, this continuing unbelievable change in our lives. We have so much conflict going on in our lives. You know, you can't talk to your friends because of your political views. You can't talk to your friends because of you know, whether you should get a shot that you don't want or not. Or you should shun people who won't get the shot. We have such nonsense going on in our lives right now that there's no doubt this PTSD will continue to expand if we don't find a way out of this and get back to normal. Which brings me back to my comments in the very beginning of this segment, is that the Biden administration is not helping this. You know, they're going to be the healers. Wasn't that he was going to heal? He's the old man who's everybody loves this guy. He's going to be a good guy. And he turns out to be the most corrupt probably of all of them. Now, you could look at his career and you could say, well, no kidding. What did you expect? You know, you don't expect the tiger to change his stripes, do you? No. They just hide it in a different way. So that's really what I'm trying to get at here. You know, these things that are going on, the drone strike, Gabby Petito getting killed, the active shooters that are going on. We have a lot of conflict in our lives. And, you know, the answer, as many people will tell you, the answer is probably for us to turn back towards God. Oh, Lieutenant Joe, with the God, you're going to talk about the God talk. No, I'm not going to talk about the God talk. I'm simply going to say, having a religious underpinning in your life, a religious connection, no matter what your religion is, having a religious connection in our society was a glue that kind of held us together, helped people to do the right thing, to look out for each other. We've removed God from our lives to such a great extent that those underpinnings disappear. And when you remove this foundation from any building, it's going to wobble and eventually it's going to fall and crash. And we are seeing that over and over and over again in our society. This is where I'm trying to go with this. I think all of this underpinning comes from the removal of religion as an important part of our lives. When you look at, you know, older societies, European societies, older American societies, going back to the foundation of our nation, it was a God-fearing people. They went to church. Now, of course, they did bad things. Of course, there was corruption. Of course, there was, you know, hypocrites. But the overall population was very God-fearing and had God at the center of their life and the Ten Commandments and lived by those kind of rules for the most part. And we had a much more orderly society. We don't have an orderly, law-abiding society now, do we? And what's the one thing that's really been removed or minimized, marginalized, more than anything else, is religion, and specifically the Christian religion. You know, you see that attack on religion everywhere and every place. One of my favorite comedians when I was growing up was George Carlin. I really liked George Carlin. He was very funny. His point of view, his ability to look at something and come up with a perspective that you didn't really think of until he said it, and then you go, well, of course that's true, and you laugh at it. I saw an old tape of him the other day, and he goes, let's talk about religion. You know, they want us to believe there's this invisible guy in the sky, and he can see every move we make. He watches you all day long. And his whole point was that there is no religion. There is no guy in the sky. There's nobody watching you. We're here all alone. And I had to say that as I'm listening to him, I'm not offended. I don't get offended when somebody says something. I either it makes me think or I turn it off if I don't like it. When he's saying, you know, what he's doing is taking those of us who have faith and saying, well, there's this invisible man in the sky. I don't believe there's an invisible man in the sky. I believe there's a God that's on a different plane than we are. When I look around and I see creation, when I see a new baby, when I see the stars in the sky, when I see my beautiful wife and I feel such feelings of love for her and for my children and my friends, and I said, that is God. And you see that there. So that's what's missing in our lives, ladies and gentlemen, I think. And that's my take on the whole thing. And that's why we have all this kind of nonsense going on. Well, we'll be back in a minute with some more. I need to think about some things, and there's other stuff I want to cover here when we get back. But stick with me here on Chasing Justice. This is Lieutenant Joe. I'll be right back.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here for Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Now listen, I often talk about some of the other shows that are here on America Out Loud. This is great. You got to tell your friends about America Out Loud. You got to get people to listen in and to jump in, not just to my show, you know, which I do appreciate. The more people listen, that's good. But all the other shows, it is really a place for free speech. And it's important for us to make sure that we listen, tune in, get involved in the conversation, and then bring what we learn to our friends and family and try and bring them along. Because the more we talk about things, the more we discuss how the world is going and what we can do to help fix it or fix our own lives or whatever, the better off we're all going to be. So here's some other things that have been going on that I'm thinking of. First, hang on. I got good news for you. Excuse me. I got some good news for you. Now, I know I've talked about Healthy Cell. All right, Healthy Cell is there's a product that they make called Immune Boost that I take. Because of the COVID, I don't want to get the COVID. I want to stay healthy. So I take Immune Boost. And what it is, it's a supplement, but it's in a liquid gel form. It comes in a little package. You open it up. You can mix it with water. You can mix it with other things. I've been telling you about it for weeks and weeks and weeks here. Well, I take it, and I feel much, much better than I did prior. And I was never in really bad shape, but I got to tell you, I feel a lot better taking this because I haven't had the colds I usually get, haven't had the sinus problems I usually get. So I'm really happy about it. They make another product, Healthy Cell, for people who have trouble sleeping. Now, when I got the Healthy Cell Immune Boost, I started taking it. And I really liked it. And I said, you know what? I bought the other stuff at the same time, the sleep stuff, because I want to get a good night's sleep. But here's the problem. I usually always get a good night's sleep. I sleep like a baby. So I wasn't sure, you know, what I was going to do with it. And then my cousin, all right, my cousin Steven, happened to say something on a Facebook post. He was up in the middle of the night and he was drinking a cup of coffee and he's like, you know, I'm one of them people, I can only get 2 hours of sleep a night and I'm miserable. I can't ever sleep. I can't go back to sleep. I feel like I have insomnia. So I reached out to Steven. I said, hey, Steven, what's the problem with the sleeping? He goes, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's been the last year or so. I just keep waking up. I can't go back to sleep. I said, I got something for you. I said, I bought this healthy cell product for sleep. I don't have a problem sleeping. I want you to try it. So he says, I'll try anything, man. So I brought it over to him. That was about 2 weeks ago. Now, I told him that after 2 weeks, if he used it regularly, I wanted to hear whether it worked or it didn't, you know, one way or another. So I see him the other day, and I said, hey, how's it going? He goes, dude, I was going to call you. He goes, I got to tell you, the first couple nights, I didn't notice much difference. But after that, man, I've been sleeping through the night. And when I do wake up, I can go back to sleep again. It's great, man. I got to get more. I said, well, good for you. So I gave him the address where to get it. You hear him on the station here, Healthy Cell. I want you to know that apparently, if you're having trouble sleeping, this stuff is really good for you. I got it firsthand from somebody I trust. And I know the immune boost works. So Healthy Cell, go take a look at it. All right. What else does the most wonderful, tremendous president and his administration have going on? And his party, right? His party. What else is the party doing? Are they reaching across the aisle? Are they trying to work together? Because, you know, they have such a mandate. You know, what is it, 75 Democrats to... Oh, no, it's not 75 to 25. Oh, well, it's 64. No, it's not 64. Oh, wait a minute, it's 50-50? 50 senators and 50 senators. So it's really split right down the middle. Is that a mandate because they have the vice president to break a tie and vote with them? Is that a mandate? Is that how we want to run our country, by one vote, by one political party? Shouldn't we be working together to share power? Shouldn't we be working together to compromise? And I'm not saying that as a conservative, I want to compromise with liberal socialists all the time. But the reality is half the country's liberal socialist, and we're all in this together. So we have to try and find a way to convince each other that our ideas are better. But at some point, when it's 50-50, you got to work together. Well, recently, you know, they're trying this $3.5 trillion budget bill that the president and his party wants, which is really a lot of giveaway money to unions. It's a lot of payoffs to people. It's a lot of this Green New Deal nonsense that they want to push on everybody. But in there, they're trying to find a way to completely change America. And what's the quickest way to change America is to bring in people who are not American and have them get a voting position in our country. So we're seeing this illegal immigration being allowed to just run amok. The borders are open. The wall, they don't want the wall. They want the borders open. And millions, literally, of people are coming into our country each year now under the Biden administration. And what's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to get these people into the country, push them into communities that are more conservative to dilute the voting base and block in these in our red states, and have these new people that are here, these new immigrants here, even if they came illegally, to then legalize them, you know, make them all citizens, and then give them the vote. And the whole idea is that, well, they will vote out of gratitude to our Democratic friends, and they will vote Democrat, and that will be the end of the two-party system in America. And that will launch us right down the socialist road permanently, right? That's the only thing it can be, ladies and gentlemen. Why else? Why would you and I have to take a vaccine so we can go to work, go to the movies, or go to a baseball game, but thousands and thousands of people coming over the border illegally do not have to take a vaccine? They don't have to be tested. You can't even ask about it. Just let them in. Just let them in. On its face value, it's corrupt. On its face value, it's obvious what they're doing. But again, you know, we have no leadership in the Republican Party, and, you know, we have no leadership whatsoever. They don't come out and talk about it or say anything about it. You know, a couple people do, but not the 50 senators. How come there's not 50 senators stomping their feet saying, we're not doing nothing until you close the borders, right? No, they're just going to go along to get along. They're miserable like everybody else. But in this bill, the Democrats are trying to push through complete amnesty for millions of illegal aliens who came into the country as part of the bill. You know, that's part of, you pass this bill, all this money, everyone's going to get this money. And part of that bill, they tack in all kinds of nonsense. And including in there is amnesty for all of these people, which then, of course, leads to citizenship, which leads to voting, and then a voting block. Remember, Hillary Clinton got the popular vote by 3 million, even though she lost the election. Most of our elections, our presidential elections, are won by the winner by 5 million or so votes. You bring in 12 million people and they all vote one way, that's the end of the two-party system. It's over. And that is the ultimate goal of our friends on the left. Now, I don't blame them for wanting to win. We both sides want to win. Don't you want to win? You want your side to win, of course. But to tilt the ship so that everything rolls to one side, that is not democracy. That is not fair. That's not appropriate. And if they were taking us to a better place, you'd say, oh, okay, well, you know, they're going to take us to more freedom, more liberty, you know, more opportunity for everybody. Let's go. We'll all go that way. That's not where they're taking us. They're taking us to less freedom, less liberty. They're taking us to a place of socialism, which we all know, common sense people know, how that ends. It doesn't end well for the people that are there. For the Pelosis and the Schumers and the Bidens, they'll end up great. You know, they'll keep raking in their millions of dollars. They'll still be able to live their beautiful, wonderful lives. And all of us peasants, you know, we'll all be equal at the bottom, right? We'll be equal. Everybody have equality that everybody wants. Equal outcome. We'll all be miserable together. That's what happens there. But it looks like, you know, there's a parliamentarian. That's a person who has a position in the Senate that looks at these bills and decides some things are cricket, some things are not so cricket. And apparently, the parliamentarian looked at this and said, because immigration and amnesty and illegal immigrants is such an important topic in America, you can't just tack it on to a bill. You can't just tack it on to a bill, a spending bill, and say, oh, look at that. We're changing the entire rule of immigration into America because it's tacked on to a bill. So they said no. The parliamentarian said no, which I think that's a good thing. If we want to do this, like everything else in our country, we should have an open and honest discussion about it. Let's talk about it. And if it turns out that we open the borders and let everybody in, well, if that's what we all agree on, well, then that's what we should do. As long as we go through the proper channels, we don't tweak it and cheat it and push it in ways that's not appropriate, fair, just, or correct. So I want to talk about that just for a couple minutes, which leads me to, obviously, the ongoing border crisis. Have you seen the videos and the pictures of the people coming across the Rio Grande? I mean, it's like 2 feet deep, so they're just hundreds and hundreds. Matter of fact, in Rio, I think it's Rio, what's the name of the town? Del Rio, Texas, I think that's where it is. There was 13,000 people underneath a bridge where they've set up a tent because they're just walking across. And the majority of them, as strange as it sounds, are not people from Mexico and South America. They're Haitian people, men and women from Haiti. So you got to say to yourself, how did they get from Haiti to Mexico to walk across the Rio Grande to enter into America? That's set up. Somebody's doing that purposefully. Now, again, we've said here, I've said many times, I don't blame anybody for wanting to come to America. It's the best place in the world. But the problem is, we can't just have everybody come because they want to. You have to be able to protect yourself. You don't leave your front door open and let people come in and take every piece of food out of your refrigerator. You got to take care of your family. You can help out a little bit here and there, but we cannot be the place where just everybody comes. We don't have enough resources. We got to take care of our own first. Then we can do immigration as it benefits our country. I don't know, that's a bad thing to say. What do you mean, benefits the country? No, we just got to let poor people in. No, that's not the idea. I believe in taking care of the poor, helping those who have less than us, of course. But we just don't let people in because they want to come. What we should be looking at is a merit-based system. What does America need from the population of the world, of the people who want to come here, and then we pick and choose. So do we need engineers? Let's bring in engineers. Do we need aircraft pilots? Let's bring in aircraft pilots. Do we need people who can do technical jobs, medical people? If that's what we need, bring them in. Does it make sense at a time when we have so many people out of work to bring in hundreds and hundreds of thousands of low-skilled personnel that don't really help us, and they displace true Americans who are in that working area It displaces them. It cuts down on their wages, their opportunities. Why? What is the purpose of that? And this is what I'm saying. When you open your eyes and you look at it, you say, oh, because they just want to be good. They want to do good things for people. Yeah, but it doesn't actually do good things for people. It doesn't help our country. So what would the purpose be? Well, the purpose is crystal clear, so that we have a huge voting bloc that will vote for Democratic candidates, and they can take over the system, and that's the end of it, the end of the one-party system once and for all. I'm going to talk in a minute to end our get-together here today about weakness and how weakness is perceived, how weakness depletes everything it touches, and how it leads to danger and other kind of problems. But I wanted to talk for a minute about the J6 thing in Washington. You know, last week they were going to have this protest in D.C. by people that were going down protesting what happened to the people who were arrested on January 6th. You know, J6, January 6th. The people that were arrested who were, at the time, in reality, trespassing. They trespassed on the Capitol. Now, I know I've seen video of people breaking windows, smashing windows, going in. Very, very bad. All those people should be arrested and held to account, no doubt about it. But for the large majority of them, what they were doing was much, much less than what happened in the summer riots, right? When buildings were burned and torched and people were killed and all kinds of violence was taking place. These people broke the law, no doubt about it. You're not allowed to go into the Capitol building like that. They trespassed. They're calling them violent insurrectionists. Well, the only shot that was fired was from a Capitol police officer who killed an unarmed woman climbing through a window. Now, there's been lots of law enforcement people out there talking about that shooting. And I watched the interview with that officer, that lieutenant who killed that woman, Babbitt, who killed her. Ashley Babbitt. And I got to tell you, as a police officer for 30 years, carrying a weapon, going into violent situations, understanding the use of force continuum, the rules for use of force, I was struck by a couple things when I watched the interview of the lieutenant. First of all, he looked scared to death. He looked scared to death as he told his story. And I know many police officers, probably the majority, I'm going to say, behind the scenes are talking to each other, very, very uncomfortable with that situation. Very uncomfortable with what happened, what the officer did to shoot an unarmed woman climbing through a window when there was officers around, could have easily taken control of her. His answers were really, really tough to listen to. When he says at the end of his commentary, I believe I, by doing what I did that day, shooting that unarmed woman climbing through a window, I believe I saved a lot of lives. That line floored me. I mean, I want to give the benefit of the doubt to my brother officer, because in most instances, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to law enforcement. You have to, because they have a very difficult job, split-second decisions, and yes, mistakes are made in those split seconds. They absolutely are. There's no way around that. You know, we're dealing with life and death things. This is not somebody who's a plumber fixing a pipe, or somebody who's cutting lawns, or even somebody who's doing mathematical calculations is not the same as the work of law enforcement. Law enforcement is often life and death decisions made in split seconds based on what's going on around you. And that's why I always gave my brother and sisters and myself the benefit of the doubt in taking some kind of action, because it's hard to decipher at that moment everything. But officers, unlike the public might think, are not trained to shoot people first. They're not. They're not trained to kill people. They're not trained to go in guns blazing. We don't have meetings before the start of the shift and say, okay, who are we going to get today? Who are we going to go after today? What group of people are we going to tackle today? That doesn't go on. What happened, though, in that shooting in the Capitol, that's the only person who was killed. The officer who died, remember the story we were told there? He was hit in the head and murdered by a fire extinguisher, by this crazy crowd of insurgents. And it turned out it was nothing like that at all. The poor guy died of a stroke. A young man died of a stroke. His family lost him. He lost his life. Terrible, terrible situation. But he was not hit over the head with a fire extinguisher and murdered by the insurrectionists taking over the Capitol. More lies, we were told, because insurrectionists. And I've asked this many times. Had they all taken over the Capitol completely, forced all the officers out, surrounded the entire building, got in there, took over every office, would they be in charge of the American government? Would those, I don't know, 2,000 people, would they be now, we've taken over the Capitol building, we are now in charge of the American military and government and economy. Would they, really? What kind of an insurrection has no ending where you don't take over? You take over a building. That happens on college campuses every single day. Are those kids that take over the administration building, are they now in charge of the college? No. They trespassed. They made their statement. They should be held accountable for trespassing. Just like these people who went in there and trespassed. They should be arrested, charged with trespass. Well, the protest recently in Washington was to protest the fact that these people who are basically trespassers have been held, many of them, in solitary confinement for months since January. They're being used as political pawns to make a point that these are insurrectionists who were trying to take over the government. They're white supremacists who wanted to do this. No, they're not. They're a bunch of people who are pissed off at the government for the way the government behaves, both sides of the aisle, but especially our friends on the left, the way they behave, what went on with the election, whether it was stolen or not. We're never going to know because nobody's ever going to tell the truth about it. We're never going to be able to look at all the evidence. It's frustrating to people, and they're striking out. And that's what happens at points in history when people have reached their limit with putting up with what the government does. They strike back. And these people, they weren't armed. They weren't killing anybody. They were breaking into a building inappropriately to make a statement. Yeah, did they walk around on the floor of the House, of the Congress, and they waved the flag, and they said stupid things, and they stood on people's desks? All bad things. All bad things. They shouldn't have done it. They should never have gone in there. And they should pay a penalty for going in there. They trespassed. Whatever the trespass rule is, whatever the law is for that. But to hold people in solitary confinement with no bail for 8-9 months is extraordinary. We are letting murderers out, rapists out. We're letting people cross our border that have all kinds of criminal histories. We're letting them in this country all over the place. And these people, they're keeping locked up in jail cells, all to make a political point. This is where we are at this point in our country, in our history. And that is a scary thing. Right? Isn't this something you would expect out of the Soviet Union, to hold political prisoners? Isn't that what those people are? Political prisoners? They're not murderers. They're not rapists. They're not terrorists. They're not bombers. They're trespassers who went in a building. You know who they are. You've documented them. You give them their bail, or you let them out with no bail, like you let murderers out now, and you tell them to come to their court hearing. And then they have their court hearing. You don't put them in a jail cell for 9 months for trespassing. It's just one more example of how we've fallen apart here as our country, as we're descending into a place that I don't know where it's going, and that's why I say it's not sustainable. This is not sustainable, this little bit back and forth. And it's going to come to a head one way or another. This leads me beautifully. How's everybody doing out there? You keeping pace with me? I know I'm going fast today. I'm covering a lot of stuff, and I'm going fast today. But, you know, as a man on a mission often will. I wanted to talk about weakness for a few minutes. Weakness, let's think about it. If you become injured, say you hurt your leg, and you can't get up and walk, does that affect your life? Sure. It's a weakness. You can't conduct your life. Now I'm going to connect the dots here, so give me a minute to pull this all together. All right? If you have a physical weakness, like an injured leg or an injured arm or a bad back. Anybody out there got a bad back? Boy, you don't realize until you have a bad back that your back affects every part of your movement. Boy, you can't. You, if your bad, your back is bad, you can't get around. It's miserable, right? So it's a weakness when you have that. Can you defend yourself when you're injured like that? You have a bad leg or a bad arm or a bad back. If you had a fight for your life, could you? Not as well, right? It would be a weakness. Well, when it comes to weakness of personality, right? How about the character weaknesses that we see in many of our political people? Our friends on the right, the ones who refuse to stand up for what they've been elected for. Isn't that a weakness? They're protecting their own stuff. They don't want to get caught in controversy. They want to be invited to the parties. They want to get along with the press. They don't want people writing bad. But mostly, they seem to want to stay in office. So therefore, they're not going to do anything that's going to upset that apple cart. Isn't that a weakness of friends on our side of the aisle, people who consider themselves conservative or Republicans? How about weakness on our friends on the left? Right? Weakness on the left, when the intellectual weakness, when they see something for what it is and they call it something else, right? You know, and I don't want to talk about abortion again, but it's a lump of cells. It's a lump of cells. They're weak. They don't have the fortitude or the intellectual honesty to say, no, it's a baby and I want to kill it. I don't want to have a baby. It would interfere with my life. So therefore, I don't want to have a baby. I want to have an abortion. All right? Ed Koch, and we've talked about Ed Koch. Ed Koch was a liberal who was pro-abortion, but he came out, he goes, let's be honest, it's a baby, and people want to kill it because it's inconvenient or it's got problems, and they don't want to have to deal with that. So therefore, let's just be honest about that and say, that's that. You know, we're moving on. So weakness, my friends, of personality, weakness of physical weakness, weakness of courage, the inability to be strong in the face of reality, to tell the truth, to make your point, is detrimental to the entire body of our nation. Just like having a bad leg or a bad back is detrimental to your body, your physical body. So I just wanted to cover that for a minute. Think about the weakness that we see all over us, everywhere, especially at our political leaderships on both sides of the parties. You know, they're both very, very weak people. They're not doing right by you and me and our children and our grandchildren. They're doing what's best for them. And that is a huge, huge character weakness. So I think I've covered everything I wanted to talk about today, which is hard to believe. In my pages of outrages I hear when I make my notes, I often have more notes than we get to talk about in our time together. So I want to thank you for being out there. I'm very, very appreciative of all of you who listen. You can reach out to me, jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. And, you know, try the healthy cell. It's a good thing to do. And better than that, let's hope for the best. Let's say a prayer for our country as we move forward. And hopefully God can help us get out of the mess that we're in. This is Lieutenant Joe signing off for this episode of Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.